Hello, welcome to Never Not Creative. My name's Andy Wright, and in this episode, we're taking a delve back into one of our Asking for a Friend events. If you haven't heard of Asking for a Friend before, it's a concept where we bring a creative leader and a psychologist together for anyone to be able to ask anything they like around mental health, career, without the fear of worrying what other people might think and whether that's going to have a knock-on effect to their career or their opportunities. So everything that is asked is anonymous. You can jump on to nevernotcreative.org and search for Asking for a Friend and find out how to register for an upcoming session to get your chance to ask your questions as well. This episode has Sally Fitzpatrick, who is a doctor and clinical psychologist with Everymind, who are also one of our research partners in the Mentally Healthy Survey. And joining Sally is Alex Waddleton, who is the author of The Right Brain Workout and a Creative from Melbourne. It's a really great episode. I hope you enjoy it. We'll be back with another episode soon. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Asking for a Friend, our July edition. I'm Andy Wright from Never Not Creative and the co-chair of the Mentally Healthy Change Group. Asking for a Friend is an initiative that's brought to you by Never Not Creative, Young Bloods, and Mentally Healthy, and exists because we wanted to create a safe place for where you can ask the questions that you're worried about or concerned about, but worried about asking them at work. So here's a safe space for you to ask these questions anonymously. We're bringing together industry leaders, mental health professionals, and to create this environment which is non-judgmental. So we don't know your background, it's anonymous. All we're here for is to just be able to help out and offer some opinions and answers to some of the stuff that you don't feel as confident to ask. Everything that we're doing through Never Not Creative and Mentally Healthy is volunteer run. It's essentially unofficial. And also, you know, we have no context to what you're going through or what your situation is. So just remember that today. And we always recommend that if things get too serious, that you can go and find some more professional help and support. With that out of the way, I'd love to welcome our guests who are on for this month. So this is Sally Fitzpatrick. Sally is a clinical psychologist and researcher who's passionate about understanding factors that contribute to the mental health and well-being of all Australians. Sally's worked as a clinical psychologist since 2008, and prior to this, she worked in the child protection sector for more than 10 years as a child protection worker, trainer, and manager. And she's currently the acting program manager of mental health and research at Everymind. And it's Everymind who we are partnering with on the mentally healthy research. Also like to welcome Alex Waddleton, is an advertising writer turned social activist turned author. He's created advertising campaigns that run all over the world for clients such as the AFL, Cricket Australia, Wrigley's, University of Melbourne, Gatorade and Schweppes. He's raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for a range of charities and was the driving force behind the Nikki Winmar statue and is the co-creator of Future Landfill. I think we'll get into a few of those today as well, because today is all about meaning and purpose. His first book with Russell Howcroft was called The Right Brain Workout, and it was a bestseller with a second volume due out this Christmas. So we'll post some links to that. Stocking, can we call it a stocking filler? Would that be okay?
Exactly what it is.
He also hosts a podcast called The Right Brain Warm Up, where he interviews a range of creative people about why and how they're creative. So welcome, both of you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
No worries. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
So we've already had, as always, there's a place to ask questions anonymously before these events, and we've had a good few come through this time as well. So, Alex, I'm going to start with you with this question. What do I do when I feel I'm being forced to do work under circumstances that I think go against what the local government and legislation has advised the general public to do? I want to speak up, but the last person who did that I feel has fallen from our boss's favour. I know only because I have been privy to it. What do I do?
So I would think it's always scary to do something on your own. So there's that old saying, strength in numbers. Is it something you could perhaps get a few of you together? It sounds like maybe you're all being forced to do these things, but if there's a bunch of you come together and have a united front, it's very hard for someone to deny that. Or if it's one-on-one, you can feel intimidated by a boss or a manager, but if you outflank them in a pincer movement, perhaps you can get the results that you need that can help everybody feel better about themselves and do the right thing.
Great. Sally, anything you'd like to add there?
My guess was when I saw this question that it was about COVID specifically. Maybe there are some things going on now that haven't gone on in the past that someone's been asked to do in their workplace. I completely agree with Alex. Doing things with colleagues and other staff members can be really, really helpful. You could potentially, if it is around COVID, ask at a weekly team meeting for COVID issues to be addressed. So it's not something that has to come up outside of the normal. There's an easy way to be able to bring it up. And then, you know, it's up to staff to be able to potentially pitch in some ideas around difficulties that they might be seeing. So it becomes a little less confrontive. I also think the way that we phrase our questions and we talk about this stuff sometimes can be quite challenging for managers. So sometimes just by asking with curiosity around, I'm wondering, or I've noticed this, or I think this, rather than you need to change this, can sometimes help. So language can often help us.
Use that with my kids.
Absolutely. It's a really good technique in and outside the workplace.
So do you think that's a bad idea to have eaten all the Nutella?
Yeah. I wonder if it would look great in your room if you picked all of your clothes up.
You two do it perfectly. Great examples. Exactly what I mean. But I agree with Alex, basically. You really want to be able to seek the advice of others and see whether they're actually experiencing the same concerns you are. Maybe it's a perspective that you have that others don't, or maybe it's shared. That's worth finding out.
And what about, I'm just going to carry on that one a little bit. Like, what about this idea of how, like, it almost feels as if someone's actually standing up and confronting that other people are watching them get knocked down? How do you counteract that if you see it happening to somebody else?
Well, I guess that's the thing, that you just need to try and find your voice. Like, all the greatest achievements in human history have been people watching it and going, you know what, enough of that. Like, seeming like we're seeing with all, you know, black deaths in custody and black lives there, it's got to a point where people just go, you know what, this is crap. I need to say something about it. I need to do something about it, because it's so easy just to watch it and not do anything. So I think, you know, it's part of hopefully where humanity is maybe hopefully getting towards, is that we're going to stand up for each other a bit more. So what's that saying? United we stand, divided we fall. So if you see someone, you know, struggling, help. That's also that, are you okay? Well, that mental health stuff, I think that's so great. Like, we're now more open about mental health. We're doing things like this, which maybe would not have happened 5 years ago. Everyone was just to suck it up and get on with it and figure it out yourself. But now you can all sort of help each other, I think, hopefully that.
I think the other thing that you can do is think about maybe going around the issue a little bit rather than confronting the issue. Maybe it's a reflection of what's the culture like in our organisation and how do we ask the hard questions? Make it a much wider point of entry rather than the very specifics. If you have a culture in an organisation where people are shut down really quickly in front of others, then that probably makes it really hard to be able to do this sort of stuff. One of the ways around that is to, you know, find some ways. How do we ask the hard questions? We have a question box in our office. We have time in our team meetings. How do we get our questions answered by the people who have information? So sometimes you just need to be a little more creative about finding those mechanisms.
Yeah, that's really good. I like that. And I think one of the focuses for us this year is going to be around leadership and the culture that that kind of leadership creates as well. So that's a great idea. So the next question, I'm also going to give this one to you, Alex. This is pretty industry focused. So a lot of lucky people who are still working at the moment have been displaced in their teams or roles or seen their hours decrease as a part of the crisis. How can we make sure that we're still getting opportunities for progression?
So the way I look at this is that, I guess, when you've got decreased hours of job, you've got the opportunity to use that time for yourself to progress yourself in a way. So I always think the best way to get progression in your career and life is to go make it happen yourself. You've got to be proactive. Go make that idea you've had in your brain for years with the internet. Basically, you can just go and make stuff happen. And basically, you should build your brand, not somebody else's. So use that time to do all these things. Like, I've, with all this COVID stuff down, I've activated all these different things. Like, I've worked full-time in advertising for 20 years and stuff. And then a few years ago, I basically went, why is my happiness dependent on how my agency is going? And if that work's been approved, I need to have all these ideas that I've had that I've never done anything with because I've been too busy. I need to find the time to do some of these things. And those are the last few years, all the things I'm most proud of that have made the best effect on the world have all been me just going off and doing it for myself for a good reason, to help people. And that feels the best thing ever, because then you're in control of it as well. You're not at the whims of 20 people in your office saying yes or no, or a client and stuff. So you're still lucky enough to have a job. That's great. But you've got this extra time to go do some awesome stuff because you've got the internet, and the internet makes things amazingly easy to happen if you push hard enough and have enough passion for it. So I reckon go take it as a positive rather than a negative.
Can you remember the first time you did that? Because I think once you've done it, you kind of go, oh, maybe this wasn't as kind of daunting as I thought it was. But can you, what was the thing that like got you across the line first?
Well, I started doing a few things here and there. The first one that happened was my son. My kids have got lots of health issues, but this was my son. So he has anaphylaxis to wheat, rye and barley and nuts. So he was always in the hospital, being rushed to hospital and ambulances and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we were kind of feeling sick and sorry for ourselves. I was walking through Royal Children's Hospital one morning, it's like 3 o'clock in the morning, going, this sucks. Why do we have this kid who's allergic to most things, most foods? And I was walking along, I saw a mum pushing along a kid who was maybe 4 or 5 years old. They had no hair, massive scar on their head, like brain cancer, obviously. And I was like, what are you going through? It's a piece of cake. Like, it's not something like this, which could, who knows where this is going to happen. You can manage this, allergies and stuff. So I literally had in that moment a thought to do something about it, because he had previously been in hospital and having blood taken out of him and crying. It was miserable because he was 18 months old. They couldn't get blood out of him. And someone from Camp Quality brought in one of those wands. You know those wands that when you turn them upside down, they change colour and they're rainbows and stuff? And he just held this and he looked at it and he stopped crying long enough to get the cannula in his arm to get the blood out, and it always stuck with me. And so when I saw this kid with the brain cancer, I just went, oh, maybe I want to do something for Camp Quality. Perhaps I could raise some money for them. And I thought, what about if for every dollar someone donated, I plucked a hair out of my head for Camp Quality? Because why not? It's just crazy enough, it might work. And so I just did it. I didn't ring up Camp Quality. I didn't get a client. I just did it in my own hours. In fact, I did a lot of it at work after hours. And so when people donated, I built a real simple website. I sort of started emailing people and said, hey, if you want to donate, I'm going to pull out hair and I'll film video of me pulling out my hair and then send it back to you. So if you donated $50, I'd literally sit there on my webcam video and pull 50 hairs out of my head. And so doing that raised over like $7,000. I had this ball patch here.
Is it true you used to look like Leo Sayer?
I feel like dancing sometimes. But yeah, no, and then it was just good. So I just did it. It wasn't for any reason, but I thought it was the right thing to do. Raised all this money. Camp Quality contacted me off the back of it and then came up with another idea for them, which was to do funny Christmas crackers, because their tagline is laughter is the best medicine, and that raised another $150,000 or something. So I just started doing things like that in my spare time. I just went, I just need to do this, not to win an award, not to impress my bosses, just to do something good. And it's just led to all sorts of different things and just going, because I was able to do that. And I'm no rocket surgeon. Yeah. I'm not a great art director. I can write okay, but I can figure out maybe some people might help. They can help build it. And things can go ballistic and go nuts if you just go and do it. You've got this amazing opportunity now in the 21st century. The internet brings a lot of bad things, but it brings all these amazing things. And you can get press coverage for something that you believe passionately. And you're the person who's done it. And you've helped lots of people. And that can't be bad kind of thing. Yeah.
That's great. All right, Sally, I'm going to move on to you. This is a great question, and it's one that we've touched on a little bit in previous sessions as well. So what advice would you give to someone approaching vulnerability and disclosing their mental health and cognitive disability diagnosis at work, especially when there's a risk that you might be treated differently or the nature of your work will be changed?
Yeah, it is a really great question, isn't it? It's a little bit sad that we're still needing to ask that sort of question these days, but I think it's really relevant and it exists out there. Stigma about mental health does continue to be a significant issue for all of us, and particularly within organisations. So by stigma, I'm talking about when someone views you in a negative way because of a particular attribute. That might be because of the way you look. It might be because you do have a mental health diagnosis. There could be a range of things that stigma is attached to. And stigma drives a lot of behaviour. And I agree with what Alex said a little while ago, is that, you know, maybe 5 years ago we wouldn't have been doing something like this. So we're certainly improving. We're getting better in our ability to be able to talk about mental health, but we still have a very long way to go. I think it can be really hard to disclose, particularly when it comes to mental health and any disability, particularly if you think there's going to be a negative consequence. So really thinking through who needs to know the information. Is it your manager that needs to be able to know, because there's something about what's going on for you at the moment that is impacting your work, your delivery of work, your capacity to do the work, the number of hours that you're able to engage with the work? Who needs to know that information? And does it have to be shared with absolutely everyone within the organisation, or can it just be shared with specific people? So thinking through who needs to know. Having a plan for that conversation is really important. Sometimes what I have done, particularly within therapy sessions, is we'll practice that sort of conversation before someone actually goes and has it with their manager. Sometimes just gaining a little bit of confidence and thinking through the words that you're going to use can be really helpful when you actually get into that situation and you have to do it. You can do that with your partner, you can do it with your friend, you can do it with someone close that you trust. So being able to do it, have a little bit of practice. But equally, if the conversation doesn't go as you plan, have some thoughts about what you're then going to do. What's your next step? How are you going to approach that? I think is often helpful, because one of the things we don't get to do is control someone else's behaviour. And it is a really vulnerable thing to be able to do and talk about things that are really personal to us. So recognising that we get to control our behaviour, we don't get to control someone else's, and think about what would I do to support me if that conversation doesn't quite work the way I want it to do. I also think that one of the things that we can do within an organisation is open the conversation around stigma more broadly. Encourage, maybe without having to do it yourself, maybe encouraging the organisation to think about, how do we address stigma in this workplace? You know, what do people think about stigma? Would people be willing to talk about things that are really hard for them, and even doing a, you know, a little bit of a check-in with people generally, even if it's anonymous, can often help give workplaces an understanding about whether this is an issue for their staff and stopping staff being open. The vulnerability all up is a really interesting topic. I've included a TED talk by Brené Brown. If people haven't seen that, I would highly recommend it, which explores vulnerability as a topic. And I've also added in some other links around disclosing mental health concerns within the workplace that go into this in a little bit more detail and for you to be able to think about before actually doing it.
Yeah, cool. I've just shared those. Alex, anything you'd like to add?
Everything you've said there is amazing, Sally. But also I think sometimes you can take something that you feel bad about in yourself and turn that into your superpower. I had a friend who had a lot of mental health issues, which we obviously didn't know about. And he talked about later on that he used to deal with that by, when he got really dark places, like very, very dark suicidal thoughts and stuff. And to combat that, what he would do is he would just go ride his bike for hours and hours and hours, basically to the point of exhaustion. And then at the end of it, go and have a Palmer as a refuel. So that was his little technique. And then it got to a point where it was so bad that he thought, well, I'm going to do something with this. I'm going to start telling other people about it. And so he started this thing called the Tour de Palmer, which is basically he rode from Sydney to Melbourne, or Melbourne to Sydney, depending on what year it was. And every night he would stop at a different country pub and have a Palmer and say, if anyone wants to have a chat about their mental health, let's go and have a Palmer together, which is how brilliant is that? So he did this thing and he raised money for Movember. And then, you know, who he's working for now? He's working for Movember, helping their mental health. Like, how amazing is that? Taking something that he's really scared to talk about, says it, opens up all these different conversations, and now he's actually literally doing that job for a living now. And he still says, if he's struggling, he and his mates have a code, are you all right? Let's go and have a Palmer. That's brilliant. It's little things like that can sometimes turn something really negative into something positive.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Such a positive story, isn't it?
Yeah, so great.
Okay, another one for you, Alex, and quite applicable, I think, to your situation, because nowadays you do a little bit more freelancing and contracting work. So this is probably a question for the people you work for, which is like, how can we take better care of our freelancers and contractors that don't benefit from workplace mental health support or wellbeing days?
So I took this just from my angle, which is to help people with their mental health is just encourage people to take care of it yourself. So like listen to podcasts, read articles, take time out to appreciate how incredible things can be. People need to make the effort to help themselves, and that can be connecting with people. So you don't do it alone, but you need to make the effort. And sometimes I get a little bit cosmic, a little bit hippie, a bit crystal, but sometimes I just go, look at my hand. Like, that's insane. Like, this thing is incredible, and that can actually cheer you up. Go and look at the trees blowing in the breeze. Here's a cool hippie, go to Byron Bay for a few minutes. But it actually does help you, because you just go, I'm struggling at the moment, but God damn, this stuff's amazing. You know what I mean? Sometimes that, that can help. I mean, to be personally honest, as a freelancer contractor now, my mental health is in such a much better place than when I was working like a dog in an agency, because I have more time for myself. So it's always good to try and find that time in your day just to take stock and go, life's actually not terribly bad. Potentially, there's all these good things. I've done this thing in the past as well. Like, I've had some really dark moments in my life. And I just think sometimes we're all conditioned to think about all the bad things that are going on in the world. You're kind of hardwired for that fight or flight sort of thing. So I did this thing a few years ago when I wrote my own eulogy. Because, you know, when you go to a funeral, and the eulogy is always, so this person is amazing for this reason, this reason, this reason. So I literally sat there, I wrote down my eulogy. Here's all the cool things I reckon I've done in my life. And as I read it, I was like, that's pretty awesome. How cool is that? Rather than focusing on my last 2 days were terrible, client didn't approve this, I'm so depressed. I'm like, man, who cares? I've done all these things and I'll do more of those things in the future if I just keep going at it. So sometimes I back them up too.
Yeah, great. Sally?
I think that's a great approach, Alex. That's the technique psychologists use an awful lot. So well done. Very nice.
Thanks.
I think it's really exciting that someone's thinking about their freelancers and their contractors. I think that's a really nice perspective to have. I suppose I have two pieces of advice or thinking that you could do. The first is actually just having some knowledge yourself around well-being and what mental ill health looks like, so you can tell the difference between the two and that you're able to then share that information. So we all know that there are some simple things we can do about our own mental health, our diet, our exercise, sleep, finding joy in life, the way Alex was just beautifully describing with looking at his hand. Those small moments can be really important. Connecting with others and finding some balance for work activities compared to non-work activities. If you know that stuff is important, what you do is start to tune in when you hear your freelancers or contractors talking and they're not talking in that way. You're identifying problems with that. So if you hear things like, I'm not sleeping, I feel down, I don't have anyone to talk to, I'm not seeing anyone outside of my home, you can ask some more questions about how they are. How are you? Are you okay? Days are a really nice model for how to do that. I think the other thing that you can really do if you are contracting with freelancers and contractors is try to build your relationship with them in terms of mental health in your organisation. So is there information you can share with them that your organisation already has? Are you able to link them into staff within your organisation so they don't feel so isolated? Are they able to come in and join in particular activities which promote connection or mental health within your organisation? They're not leaving them on the outer, but are there touch points that they can also join in with that might be able to give them some information and support as well?
I think there's also, like, you kind of touched on it there, but there's also like a really simple answer, which is maybe just treat them like employees, you know, like every other human in your business that you're working with. I always used to find it strange sometimes when in an agency and everyone goes out for lunch, but the freelancers have to stay behind. And it's like, what's the deal with that? Like, you know, they're working for you. Why can't we treat them like employees?
Treat them like human beings.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you mentioned there someone saying that not getting enough sleep, because I've always been, and this is separate to any of the questions, but I just thought it's a good little tip that I heard on a podcast. And it works for me because I was always at 2.5 hours to go to sleep and miserable the next day. And I heard someone talk about this thing to get to sleep, which is, it's a really, really great practice, which I go to sleep, close my eyes, try to go to sleep, close my eyes and go from A to Z. And every letter I go through, I'm grateful for something starting with the letter A. So A, I'm grateful for air, because the air means I can breathe, it means I can function, which feeds the world, blah, blah, blah. B, I'm happy because I'm grateful for the letter B, which might be bees, because bees are amazing because they pollinate them. You know what I mean? And you just do that in your head. And I don't think I've got past the letter T yet. And it's actually good because it helps you go to sleep, but also you've got all this positive gratitude going into your brain as you're trying to go to sleep. So I just thought that was a good little tip.
I think it's a great tip. I think there's lots of strategies around, and sleep hygiene is a really important thing. You know, there's more and more information on. Life gets really hard when we don't sleep. It doesn't matter how tough things are, they're going to be even tougher if sleep isn't part of your normal routine. So using those tips and, you know, talking to your colleagues and friends about how they fall asleep, particularly within the creative industries where, you know, you guys are absolutely wired to be thinking and to be engaged all the time, those sorts of strategies about how you do turn your mind off to be able to actually get some decent sleep are really important.
Yeah, great. So, Alex, this isn't my question, but it sounds like I'm saying it. I know I'm lucky to still have a job right now, but I'm not enjoying it. How do I find ways to keep motivated? It's not like I can go and get another job right now.
Well, I guess it again goes back to I used to base my entire happiness on my job. Like I said, it was all about have I won awards here? And, you know, this was summed up my mental health and that sort of thing. I remember when I won a Silver Lion at Cannes for copywriting. I was the only Australian to win a copywriting award that year. And I told my mum and she says, oh, what won gold? And I was like, that's not helpful. And that feels like that's what the entire industry is like. If you win a silver or bronze, oh, well, they won a gold. Oh, you didn't win a gold. They won a Grand Prix. Oh, they only won one Grand Prix. They won four Grand Prix. You can never be happy if you're going to base your entire life on your job. So I try not to base my entire happiness of my life on my job anymore. So that's why I have all these other things that I've got on the go, doing all these things like getting the Nicky Bimar statue made, like all the stuff that I'm most proud of in the last 2 years, I have not got paid a cent for. And I've poured more time and energy into those than anything that I've ever been paid for. But, you know, I've found a much greater depth of happiness to that. And when I then go back to my paying job, I feel really good about that, but I'm not so emotionally destroyed if it doesn't go ahead. So it improves my happiness in that. And I work better because I'm freer, because I know I'm going to do these amazing projects on the side, but I've also got all these cool things that pay for it also. I'm not going to do a good job of those, so it's got given me the time to do all these other things as well. So you just got to find that balance of finding things that excite you outside of your job, and then you never know. It might switch, and all of a sudden you'll be like, oh, those things I've been doing on the side, it's too difficult. Thank God I can just do this ad job for a while and just do something that I can tick off and I've achieved something every day. So just take it as an opportunity to grow in different ways. That's why my whole life has always been finding ways to feel bad about myself and feel dark, and now I've kind of tried to flip it 180 to try to find ways to feel good about myself and hopefully help other people while doing it. Because I think that's I remember reading about, I listen to a lot of podcasts because as a creative person, I do a lot of slacking off, a lot of procrastinating. And it was a really good study, which was they had a picture of three people, three kids. One kid in the middle was smiling and the two kids on the other side were not smiling. And they asked, like, kids in Western society, is that kid in the middle happy? And they go, of course he's happy. He's smiling. He's happy. And then they went to Eastern society and asked the same question. And they were like, well, no, he can't be happy because his two friends are not happy. So let's try and do the thing where multiple people are happy and you'll find ways to enjoy it if you're helping other people and doing things, and your job will be fine. And you might find passion that you didn't know you had, and you might grow could go anywhere.
I love that. And that also like opens up like all the your perception of happiness and somebody else's perception of happiness. And like you think that you should be happy because like to everybody else, it looks like that. I'm also reading a book at the moment called The Culture Map, which is really interesting about how different people communicate from different backgrounds. And like when someone might, you know, be giving negative feedback, how they might couch it in like really vague terms versus others that might give negative feedback in really direct terms, and just how so much is lost in that kind of translation. It's always quite important to think about like what the other person might actually be meaning at that point in time. Sally, do you want to add to this one?
I think it's a fascinating conversation. Happiness from a psychologist's point of view is really, really problematic. I really struggle with the idea of happiness. It's something that we all strive for in life. And as such, it's really a problem. We can't achieve happiness all of the time. It's just not possible. And if that's our goal, what it means is that if we're not happy all the time, then something's wrong. And I don't know that life works like that. So happiness as a life goal, I think, is something we should be really thinking about, whether that's one that we actually want to have. I think something that's more helpful is a valued life. And a valued life means that you can have lots of different emotions, including happiness, sadness, anger, frustration, joy, elation, which all come and go, and they can all be present. What your values are and how you act on them are more likely to be more meaningful in your life than aiming for happiness per se. So let me give you an example. A value for work might be providing good quality work. That's something that you think is really, really important. It's still possible to enact that value even if you're in a job that you're not completely satisfied with at the moment. And by doing that, what you're going to do is feel a lot more satisfaction around what you're doing on your day-to-day work rather than getting down about this is not the job that really makes me happy in life. So focusing on what your values are, thinking about what they are, and whether you are enacting them, whether you're living by your values, is likely to create a level of happiness as a byproduct rather than happiness as the goal. Emotions are a variable. They come and go. Jobs are variable. They come and go. Your values, though, are pretty core to you and they're going to always be there. I think the other thing that's really important or that stood out to me with that question is motivation. We're in really tough times. COVID has really flipped us all on our heads. And I think sometimes we have an expectation that we should just be able to keep doing things the way we did prior to COVID. And maybe we need to ease up a little bit, be a little bit kinder to ourselves, recognize that these are unusual times and that our motivation may not always be as high as what it was. Think about the things that you did before that did motivate you. Can you go back and do some of them again? What's worked in the past? Talk to your colleagues about how they're coping, how they're feeling, what are they using to motivate themselves, and break things down into smaller bits. If you're not feeling motivated, don't try and do everything all at once. Do something small and then reward yourself. Whether that's going and getting a cup of tea, whether it's sitting in the sun for 5 minutes, whatever that is, if you're feeling like I can't do this whole day's work, do a small part of it and then do something nice for yourself would be my key tips.
That's great.
On that being in the moment thing, I heard another good analogy. I've got so many analogies here. Have I got an original thought? I don't know. But it was a really good one. We need to stop playing life like it's chess. We are always trying to plan ahead and defeat someone and start playing it like it's Tetris. We just have to keep moving and change, you know, and you can never beat it, but you can always just keep doing the best you can. And I think that's such an amazing analogy because it's not chasing happiness. It's not chasing this. That. It's just being in the moment and doing the thing is that's life. That's the happiness is being in the moment. It's not actually smiling. It's actually just being, doing something and being focused on it and doing that can be a good way.
I love it. I'm going to use that one, Alex. That's a really nice analogy. We, you know, the past is history. We can't do anything about it. The future is unknown. We can't do anything about it. All we've got is now. Mm-hmm. And all we can do is manage the here and now. And everything is constantly moving. So if we're not on a happy job, that's probably not going to be forever. If we're not feeling right, happy right at this moment, it's probably not going to be forever. Things keep moving. All we can do is the here and now. Yeah, you should be a psychologist.
I read a lot of hippy-dippy books. Be Here Now by Ram Dass changed my life. Oh, my God. Read it. It's incredible.
The next question is going to go to you first, Sally. So, and we can work out whether this is fair on people that work for the government or not, given that you work for the government. So my partner and I have very different jobs. Theirs is a cushy government role with plenty of work-life balance, and mine's a fast-paced agency role that leaves me wound up, depleted, and exhausted at the end of each day. We're having real trouble reconciling the very different effects of our jobs on who we are while working from home together. Do you guys have any tips for finding balance and bridging gaps in understanding?
Yeah, I want to find the cushy government job first. If you can let me know where I actually find that, that would be great. I'm going to my manager with those demands because that's not my experience of working in the public sector, but everyone has a different experience. To be serious, though, I think this is a really, really interesting question because, again, COVID has flipped the way we work on our heads. All of a sudden, we are sharing our house with our partner very recently or even with school closures, you know, if there are current cases, with children, with pets. It's a way of working that we haven't had to do on an ongoing basis. So I think for me, communication, flexibility and compassion are probably the three words that I would use about that. We really need to work a little bit harder at responding to those sticky points that we didn't have to do 6 months ago. And working from home is one of those really, really sticky points. So I think a couple of things that you could do is think about within your relationship, what did you do differently before COVID? You still had a cushy job or a demanding job. How did you keep your relationship going even though those two things were happening? How did you negotiate the hours and when you would find time to spend together? How did you find those down times that you enjoyed each other's company? Where did you find the joy in your relationship? Going back and thinking about that and what kept you connected, I think is a really nice thing for all of us to be able to remember. I think spending some time and communicating with your partner around the benefits and challenges from working from home and doing both. There were some really good things about working from home. For me, we were only working from home for 6 weeks and I desperate to go back there. My employer does not have the same view and I am back in the office. So I saw some real benefits, but there are also some challenges, and being able to identify both the benefits and the challenges and brainstorming some solutions to those challenges is really helpful. That might mean different spaces in the house for you to be able to do different things. It might mean that you need to do some activities individually as well as a couple. You might need to have some downtime where it's just you enjoying life as well as doing things together. And I think self-compassion is about being kind to both ourselves and those around us in these really unusual times, recognizing that this is not just about getting on as normal, whatever normal looks like for you, easing those expectations for us. We're really good at giving that advice to other people, but we rarely listen to ourselves around that advice, and just being willing to do things a little more differently and reducing the stress of needing to maintain everything at once at such a high level, I think is really a really nice idea.
Alex?
Yeah, I find it hard to reconcile how much pressure and how much time you spend doing advertising when it's just advertising. So I don't know that that would be hard to understand with someone else that has more regular hours and stuff. So it makes it really difficult when you're exhausted at the end of the day to come home and put on that happy face and, you know, be the best version of yourself. But I guess the only things you can do is make time where you don't have your phone. When you get home, put your phone away. So when you actually spend time, it's the old quality time thing. You can. It's better to have 10 minutes of quality time where you're not distracted by phones and all that gunk, and you're just looking at each other and talking about not work or work or just being in the moment again, I guess. So, yeah, it's a hard one because, yeah, advertising is such a time, takes so much time, it's so much pressure. It's hard, totally, but I guess you just got to find those little moments, even throughout the day, just to check on each other or something, just make it a two-way street, so it's not them just alone going, why are they working all the time? It's like, well, you know, I find 10 minutes of my day to say hello to you two or three times a day, and we've just connected at least throughout the day, so when it's the end of the day, it's not all just lumped into, we've got an hour and a half before bedtime, we've connected throughout the day maybe, as a thought.
Okay, so this is the last one from the ones that got sent in first, and it kind of relates a little bit to what we were just talking about. So, Alex, this one to you. How to manage your boss when his expectation is to work outside of business hours, including weekends, regularly? How do we handle this?
Well, I guess, you know, I've totally done that. In my 20 years in agencies, I've had so many bosses who have said that. When I was a boss, I made certain that I was not like that because I just think it's kind of crap. I think it's a default agency that's not actually beneficial to creating better work, because you need to have a life to put life experiences into your work to make it better, so you can also be a human being rather than an employee, like we were talking about before. So I guess all I can say is that if you're enjoying it and you're liking it and you're getting good work out of it and that's making you feel good about yourself, go for it. If you're not, I guess you'll just have to make a change in the long run, because as I say, you're not tied to that job forever. You can always, when all this disaster of the world is over, you can look for other work. You can try and find other interests outside of your job, even though I know you're probably short of time. But, you know, there's things out there. You don't have to stay doing what you're doing forever if you're not enjoying it. You can change. You're in control. The only person who's running your life is you. So you can make that change. It's difficult. I know I've done that where you get a bit of Stockholm syndrome, but you need to sort of take that step outside and go, is this making me happy? Not that we're searching for happiness, but is this the right thing? But you can make a change. So just, you know, if there are people who do that, then often they don't change, because I know I've had lots of bosses who, no matter what you say to them, that's just who they are. So, yeah, that's all I could say.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing, so for those of you that don't know, the Mentally Healthy Change Group created some minimum standards for businesses in our industry and employers. And one of the things that we included in that industry standard was a policy around days in lieu. And this idea that if you are going to work such kind of relentless hours, that it's good to have that back and to find that time to be able to kind of, you know, regroup and gather yourself into the next thing that you're on. So, you know, you take a look at that. I'll post that now. And you'll see that actually there's a bunch of great businesses on there that have signed these minimum standards. And so it's also quite a nice way of just sort of rationalizing something like this and being able to go, hey, what if we sign this, we might be able to have this conversation a little easier, because it's not now a personal one. It's something that we're committing to. Sally, did you want to add anything?
I think it's a really, really tough one, trying to find that middle ground between meeting your boss's expectations and setting the boundaries around your own work and personal lives. Look, communication is always important. Here, some bosses are never going to change, but sometimes opening the door for communication can help. So checking in with your boss either first thing in the morning or maybe by mid-afternoon around, well, what are the priorities for the day? What do you need me to absolutely do today? And can we put a boundary or expectations around when those tasks are due so that they're not bleeding into, your after-work hours? Clarifying those expectations in monthly meetings with my staff, we have performance development reviews, and it's an opportunity to not only ask about tasks per se, but the way we work. What are our expectations around how we work, what's required, when are the up times, when are the times that it might be a little bit down, and just opening that conversation for staff often makes them feel like they can ask some questions when they need to. But ultimately, and this may not be really popular, but we often help to create the environment that we live in. So if we respond to texts between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m, we're going to get texts and emails between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. It's a really hard thing to do, but what we're inadvertently doing by responding is giving the message that we're willing to be available. Now, there's times in everyone's job where that needs to happen, and that's part of that previous conversation, and I absolutely expect that. But if you don't set some boundaries, people won't respect those boundaries. So whether it's turning off phones, whether it's not responding to those emails or phone calls, whether it's being able to say, when I clock off at 6 o'clock on a Friday night, I'm really sorry, but I'm not going to look at my emails until 6, 7, 8 a.m. Monday morning. And if there is something you want from me, that's just not going to be possible. We're all in different positions, though, as to the extent we can say that. But starting small and setting in some small boundaries and then trying to grow them is the way to make that happen.
Yeah, I always used to find sometimes as well, it was a bit my own guilt. Well, if I leave now, people are going to be looking at me, and I'm working. If you left before 6 o'clock, you feel guilty. I'm like, this is a bit crap. Which reminds me of another good advertising saying, which was a boss saying to an employee, if you don't come in on Saturday, don't bother coming in Sunday, which is pretty funny. So, yeah, if you can try and put up some of your own boundaries. Also, the thing is, if you put up your own boundaries and prove you can still do the work,
right.
Some people get away with murder because they just get it done. Like if you can focus and procrastinating and looking at YouTube videos takes up a lot of creative thinking time. But if you can get your stuff done on time every time, then you're going to have more freedom than if you're taking forever to do stuff.
I think we're really good at setting boundaries for other people in our lives, particularly our kids. Mm. But we tend to forget that sometimes we need to set those boundaries for ourselves too. Mm. And our mental health is as reliant on those boundaries being set as it is for setting that structure for others.
What you just said there, like that getting away with murder, like we just need to change that perception, like feeling guilty for leaving early, getting away with murder because you're not there till 10. It's like, it's actually the opposite. You're probably doing better work because you've been able to leave on time. You've got the balance right. You're finding time. And I think you said it earlier, like to have a life, to put your life into your work. Like that's, that's what we want a lot of the time from people we work with.
Sorry, it goes to interrupt. The best CD I ever worked for is Ben Coulson, who I think he's just become McCann PCD. And I remember him, someone was telling a story about him, how it was like 4 o'clock on a Wednesday. And someone said, 5 o'clock on a Wednesday one day. And someone said, half day, Ben. And he said, if that. I sort of just reframed it. He just walked out the door. And he's renowned for never not being in the office very much. And people say, he's lazy or something. It's like, not at all. He's actually he even said to me the reason why he does that is he likes to have the distance, because if he's in the job all the time, when he reviews work, he can't review it properly because he's down in the thing. He needs to have that, the helicopter view. So sometimes and that's just him. Everyone accepts that's how Coulson works and everyone works around it. And it's totally fine. And he's one of the most accomplished creative directors in the world. he just went, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah,
deal with it.
Yeah, it's great. Okay, so we've got some questions from attendees now. So I'm a textbook introvert, and as you might imagine, this makes group brainstorms and turning around ideas on the spot a challenge for me. In advertising, many of my peers are the opposite. How can I turn my quieter personality and way of working into a strength?
I think that's me. Brainstorms, I hate brainstorms. I'm like, I want to think about it for a bit. I'm terrible. I've got no... That's the thing. If I have to talk about myself or come up with things on the spot, I'm terrible. But if I'm talking about ideas, I can talk about it to anyone. And I'm totally introvert thing. And yeah, just in brainstorms, I just kind of sit there and go, like, if I have to be here because the boss says I have to be here, maybe I have to be here. But I will go away and think about it and come back with better ideas a day or 2 days later. And most of the greatest thinkers in advertising, I reckon, are introverts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Ant Keo, who's, you know, big ad, he's super introverted, but he's got 1,000 million different creative personas that he's got going on, because the ideas is what's more important than the personality, I reckon. So, you know, just turn that introvertedness, shows that you're probably a deeper thinker than people who just go, hey, another idea. Turn that in, again, turn that negative into your superpower. Turn that thing that you feel bad about into the thing that makes you different to all the other people.
I think the other thing with that is to, like, you might need a little bit more preparation in those situations. Like, I know, you know, I've worked in agencies where it's like, yeah, right, we're going to have a brainstorm, and you kind of look around the room and you assume, I think this is maybe how this person like might start feeling, which is, if you're not doing this and chucking stuff out, then you're not contributing. But actually you are, you're just processing things very differently. And I think it's important to either prepare or to follow up, so that you can show that actually, yes, I have done all of this thinking as well. I'm just going to deliver it in quite a different way, because that's not how I work.
I think it's really interesting within the creative industries. I hear people within this industry talk about the value of being unique. And yet what we do is we expect everyone to, or this question's, you know, hinting that we expect people to work in the same way. Value your uniqueness. That, you know, it's an absolute skill that you have, and go for it. You are an important person. The way that you work is important. You need to find some ways around of being able to contribute to that, but don't feel like you need to do it like everyone else does.
Yeah, definitely. All right, next question. Sally, you can kick us off with this one. So what do you do to prioritise your own mental well-being on an everyday basis? The communications industry is so demanding, and I find that if I need to find more time in my life, the first thing that sacrifice is me time.
Wow, I think that question talks about me, and I don't work in the creative industries. It's a really, it's a hard thing to do. So I've had some really tough jobs in my life, working in child protection, working in academia, in different bureaucratic organisations. I have never worked standard hours, and it is an ongoing battle, even as a clinical psychologist, to make sure that I prioritise my own mental health. This is not easy. So ease up on yourself in terms of, I need to be able to do absolutely everything. I need to be the best parent, the best employee, the best contractor, the best sports coach on a Saturday. I need to get the cooking, washing, housework done, homework done, and still find time for me. It's not possible to have as many minutes in the day to be able to do all of those things. So you need to start small. You need to find the things that really are important to you. I said earlier, things like sleep, diet, exercise are absolutely crucial to you being able to do any of the other things. If those things are not working, then everything else becomes really tough. Start small. Don't try and have a pottery, you know, career on top of a demanding job. Do the things which provide joy for you. For me, it is absolutely sitting on the back deck of an evening with no TV or radio on and just having a conversation with my husband. It is that smaller thing which just gives me a sense of being able to settle. You need to find out what they are for you. Is it about literally smelling the roses? Is it about finding a 5-minute walk? Is it about just literally sitting yourself in the bathroom, shutting and locking the door and going, no one can ask me a question for 5 minutes. What is it that works for you? That's how you prioritize your mental health. And what you need to do is notice that you're doing it. I think what we often do is the things that people tell us need to work, and then it's another task done. It's about being, as Alex said earlier, in the moment and absolutely noticing, you know what, this feels okay. That's a good thing.
And it's that old thing as well. There's not going to be a quick fix. It is just all the time. You know, it's like we will, you know, like particularly Western society, we reach for what's the pill that's going to fix me? No, you just need to do a lot of little things all the time. It's all those little things, they all add up to something big. And you'll enjoy them too if you start doing these little things. A few minutes here and there can just change your day.
The more you sacrifice your time, the more that you're never going to get it back. No one's going to come to you and say, you know what, Sally, now is your time of the day to have 5 minutes to yourself. if I don't do it for me, no one else is going to do it. And it sounds to me like this person might even be a parent, and that makes it even tougher. We want to model to our kids how to look after ourselves, and sometimes that means that we need to look, you know, take some time out for us too.
I found another way to find extra time in the day is to delete social media off your phone, because it's so easy. Oh, it's there again. I've got to check that thing. I've got to see that thing. If you don't have that opportunity, that choice to go and check your social, you have to go to a computer. It takes a while. I'm interested in doing something else now. You know,
it's true. My emails used to flash up at me. The notifications, take the notifications off.
Yeah.
Great. I think also, like, we in our industry, it's quite hard to say no. You know, like, we're always wanting to help. We always want to be able to take advantage of an opportunity that arises, and that actually sometimes one of the best things is to say, you know what, I can't contribute to that right now. And we had someone in our change group actually who said the other day, I'm going to have to take a little step back from this because there's some other stuff going on that I need to focus on me for a bit. And that's great, like, to have the courage to say that and to let everybody else know as well.
And other people will find that courage themselves as well, you know?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, definitely say no now and again and think about, you know, can you take on everything that you've been sort of volunteering for, and, yeah, have a think about what you can do for yourself. It's a tough one. So, got another one here. I find that every night before I go to sleep, I think about work. Even if I'm not that stressed or I've tried to wind down before bed, my head just goes through briefs, job numbers. Oh, it must be awful. Although you think job numbers would send you to sleep. Just for the hell of it, is this normal or can I change this? So I guess we've had one answer to that question, which is the A to Z that you talked about earlier, Alex. But any other thoughts on this one? How do we switch off?
Okay, so I mentioned sleep hygiene earlier. When psychologists talk about sleep hygiene, they talk about a sleep routine. One of the ways to think about sleep is it's like a muscle. Unless you train it, it's never going to work for you. So if you want to be able to build your strength, you go and do weight training, and then what happens is that your muscles in your arms and your legs are able to be able to tolerate that more and more. Sleep is really, really similar. What you want to be able to do is set a routine and keep practicing that every single night. So the more that you can go to bed at the same time and wake at the same time, even on weekends until you get into a sleep routine, is really important. Turning off technology at least an hour before bed. That means no phones, no iPads, no computers, preferably not even any TV. And that's something all of us are really bad at doing at times. Having the routine of telling your body, okay, now it's ready for bed. When you go to do weights, you'll do some warm-up. You won't just pick up a really heavy weight. You want to be able to tell your body, now's the time, ready for sleep. For some people, that might mean a shower. It might mean a warm cup of tea. Get into a routine of what works for you in that regard. If you can't turn off your head, try sitting down and writing out all your thoughts or your worries before you get into bed. Do not get into bed and write them. Do it outside of bed. Bed really is for sleep and sex. Really, S is sleep, sex, that's it for bed. You don't want to be doing anything else. Worry is not an S. You don't do it in bed. If you find yourself waking up at 2 a.m. in the morning and you're really, really worried and you can't put yourself back to sleep with Alex's amazing A to Z technique, get out of bed and pick up the most boring book that you've got in the house. And my bet is that you will be getting really droopy-eyed really quickly. At the point you're droopy-eyed, it's the time to get back into bed. If your mind switches on, get out of bed again. What you're doing is teaching your body that when you lie down for sleep, that's what you need to do, and bed is associated with sleep. We do so many other things in sleep, including thinking and worrying, that we're not teaching ourselves how to actually go to
sleep. Yeah, great. Next one is for getting into this industry. That's it, you know, if you want to now, after all, we've heard all about all of this, but we know it's good. It is good. So I've just finished award school. Myself and the 70 other or so Victorian students in my year will now be trying to land jobs in agencies. This isn't a great time to be looking for jobs. What would you do if you're a young creative entering the job market right now? Alex.
I would separate myself from all the other award school students and just start making some things. Like, you don't need clients. You can just do it. Like, I've done a few things where I haven't had a client, but it was just the right thing to do. And then the client has approached me and said, oh, that was really great. Would you like to work for me? Do things like that. So just go and do some stuff. Like, that's what you can do with, like, charity things. The best thing you can do is prove to a prospective employer that I made this stuff off my own bat. They'll be like, oh my God, we need someone like you right now, because there's so many people in my agency who are slacking off right now. You know what I mean? So just go and make some stuff. Because, you know, that's the bit I find is that it's almost the easiest bit in advertising is the coming up with the idea, but it's getting it through and made. That's the difficult bit. If you can prove you can do the difficult bit of making some stuff, you're going to stand out from everybody else who has a folio full of award school sketches. You've gone and made this website. You've gone and written this story. You've gone and done this thing for a little charity that got onto the radio. Mm-hmm. It was just a cool thing to do. And you've learned all these skills doing it, then you'll stand out like anything.
Yeah, great. So this next question starts with a little bit of ego boost. So you guys are doing so much for me. Thank you, which is great to hear. I'd love to know whether any books have been particularly poignant for you in switching your thinking. What's your must read? I fill the space that you guys think. So I think I might have even mentioned this before. One of the best books I've read on mental health that's helped me understand it better is Lost Connections.
That's the one I was about to bring up. It's brilliant. Yeah.
By a guy called Johan Hari. So I 100%. It's just because it's not just about one aspect of mental health. It kind of covers everything in society that is affecting us. So for me, that was a big game changer.
Okay, so for me, if I had to choose one, and mental health is my bread and butter, so it's a really hard one, The Happiness Trap by Russ Harris is absolutely crucial. It does what I talked about earlier, is focusing on values and not engaging with the reality of our thoughts or what we think is the reality. So if we have a thought in our brain, we all assume that that thought must be true. Nothing could be further than the truth. How we engage with that thought will determine how we feel and what we do. And Russ's book is a really nice way of being able to give you some really good tips on how to manage that and respond differently and be in the moment.
So the book that I really love, it's sort of an advertising but for life philosophy type book. It's called It's Not How Good You Are, It's How Good You Want to Be, I think, by Paul Arden, which is just amazing because it just reframes everything you think about advertising and just change it so you can stand out, so you can be happier, you can be more successful in your career and be a more well-rounded person. It's amazing. It's only, you can read it in like 2 hours, I reckon. It's perfect for advertising people for sure. It's bench and stands, lots of pictures, big type. It's amazing. So I would have a read of that if you can. Yeah.
Yeah, great. Okay. So we are just heading over. I'm going to put one last question into here. And there's a few that have same number of votes. So let's go with this one. So hi, thank you for this. Deciding what career to get into, what are some practical ways to figure that out? After working in and studying different industries and with no work at the moment, it's a good opportunity to think about meaning and purpose, but I'm struggling to find what direction to go.
Oh, meaning and purpose, I think you can just start doing stuff that may not pay your money, and then if you just get a job that pays your money, then that's cool too, but you can just start doing things and you never know what might happen if you just start making things. That's my advice for everything is just start making things, just start doing it. Even if you're not qualified to do it, just start doing it. Like that's what I think is great about, again, the internet. Like there's all these courses and degrees and stuff you can do, but basically every information you need to know about anything is accessible straight away. So you can learn about anything. And then I always had this thing where if I had an idea that just kept tapping me on the shoulder, like one of those things where I couldn't go to sleep and it just said, you should do this, I'd write it down and then not in my phone, I'd write it down. And I go, I need to do that. And I just go and figure out a way to make it. And that has helped choose all the different things that I'm doing with my life now. Like I just do full-time social good campaigns because I get people all the time sending me things, hey, I've got this idea for a social good thing, but I don't know how to do it. Can you help me? Like, yeah, sure. What about we did this and doing all these cool things with amazing people just by sharing ideas. That's what I've always found as well in advertising. It's such a competitive thing. You never share your ideas and stuff. Just tell, you've got an idea, it's half-baked, just say it. Yeah. You don't know who's going to hear it and say, what about we did this with it? What about you did this? Oh, I know someone who's hiring someone who maybe might like those ideas you're talking about. So just talk about all your ideas and all your thoughts and anything could happen.
My tip would be, what do you like doing? If you had an hour, you had 2 hours spare and you didn't have to do anything else, what's your go-to? And once you start identifying those go-tos, what are the elements about that that you actually like? Start noticing what is it about that stuff that you like. And that can give you some really big hints as to the sorts of directions that you can go in.
Right. Brilliant. I think the other thing is, like, you mentioned it earlier as well, Sally, like a lot of people think that you've got to have this plan for your career. And it's almost I think the best things I've done in my career have always, I've kind of fell into, like, I now run a software company and I've been in creative agencies for most of my life. Like, I didn't plan to run a software company at any point, but an opportunity came up and I went for it. And now I love it.
There you go, Tetris.
Tetris.
No one's career ever turns out the way that they expect. I don't care which industry you're in. That's part of the life experience. Embrace it and run with it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm just going to recap a few things because today has been full of incredible advice. So there's definitely something around, like, I think what we did really well actually was we set a theme for this month, which was meaning and purpose. And it's really kind of borne out, I think, in some of the advice. And I think it's important to try and find the right meaning and purpose in what it is that you're doing. I loved, Sally, your point around when being vulnerable, like, think about who needs to know and why. It's not just a case of disclosing it, but actually think about and have a plan about how you're going to approach that with somebody. And, you know, Alex, like, you brought up some of the best things about following your purpose and beliefs and how, like, you actually get great results when that happens. And again, I think, like, those things open opportunities, like your friend that ended up working at Movember, like, what a great success story. We should all just go off right now and write our own eulogy, which would be a great idea. And happiness, like, this quest for happiness, we need to be a little bit more realistic with. So, we need to think about it in relation to the other emotions and feelings and the reality of everything that kind of throws at us. And yeah, like you said earlier, we all need to start playing a little bit more Tetris with our life and be comfortable with that and taking a little less concern around the chess part, which of looking into the future. So thank you both for your time. It's been such an amazing session. Thank you to everyone as well who was commenting and adding links and people. We could start a book club right now, I think, with everyone that posted into the chat as well. And it's been fantastic to run this session. So we'll be back.
If people want to contact me or have any questions, I've put my email address in the thingy, or you can just LinkedIn me as well, and I'm happy to give out any ridiculous pearls of wisdom that probably don't help at
all. Yeah, great. And also, don't forget to sign up for upcoming sessions. Also, all of the sessions that we've done in the past are on nevernotcreative.org as well. Thanks to Young Bloods, who do an awesome job at kind of helping us put all this together as well, and the Mentally Healthy Change Group. There's also a Facebook group for Never Not Creative if you want to join in that, and we kind of continue having some of these discussions as well. But that's it for this month. Thanks again, both of you. It was absolutely brilliant. There you go. Thank you. Epic session, I think, is what we'll leave that comment with. And, yeah, we'll see everyone next month. Thank you very much again.
Thanks, Andy.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you're interested in more Asking for a Friend, you can jump onto nevernotcreative.org and just search Asking for a Friend, and you'll find many more recorded episodes of our live Asking for a Friend events. Thanks very much to Streamtime, who give us all the support we need to be able to do Never Not Creative, this podcast, and a whole bunch of the initiatives that we do to try and improve things in the creative industry. Check out streamtime.net/healthybusiness to understand more of the things that are being done, why we believe in what we do at Streamtime and why we think that's important, and how you can have a healthy business, which essentially means for us, healthy profit with healthy people. Check out streamtime.net. We'll see you on another episode soon.